Welcome to the Witty Committee. I'm Courtney.
And I'm Claire. And this week, we're discussing Claire, the last book in the summer collection. But before we get into that, let's chat a little bit about our media favorites, non-book edition. What have you got going on this week, Courtney?
So, if you recall from our Thursday episode, I said that one of my goals was to reduce my screen time. And for my phone, I successfully did that. I'm down 11% from last week. And my iPad didn't give me an update percentage wise that I could just read off the top of it, which is fine. But I returned that book that I was reading that I told you that I was like channeling your inner, like, if you don't like it, just don't keep reading it. So I returned the book that I wasn't liking. And instead, I started watching the Harley Quinn animated TV show on HBO Max. It is so good. Oh, I love it. What about you, Claire?
Why do I feel like that is so in line with your vibe? I just feel like that, I don't know, it's the chaos energy that I think
it's because my favorite, like, I really like Marvel superheroes, and for DC, like, I could kind of care less about the superheroes, but I really love the villains. The villains in DC are just so good.
I agree with you on that. I think that, like, the Batman villains are, like, some of the best villains just because they're so absurd. Like, isn't the Riddler one of them? Mm-hmm. Like the what's the Penguin?
Yep.
Oh, so good. So good. But yeah, that's awesome. I definitely should add that to my list. I am still in the midst of rewatching Sex and the City, and thoroughly enjoying myself. I have many thoughts about the idea of the reboot, but I'm not going to get into them on here. If you would like to discuss them with me, feel free to reach out via socials because I will tell you all of my ideas. But other than that, it's actually funny that you bring up like ditching a book, because I literally on Thursday, the one we talked about that just went up, when I was talking about what Charlotte Walsh likes to win, it's really, the reason I think it's just hitting me wrong right now and why I think I'm going to put it down is it's a lot of like, it's basically a woman who wants to run for the Senate, for Senate. And a lot of what she talks about is like, I just see so much division in our country now. And she's like ostensibly running for 2018 election. And I'm just like, this is not the time to talk about unity. It's not it's not for me right now.
Yeah, sometimes books can be like good in and of themselves, or like media can be good in and of itself, but just like not right for the headspace where you're at or where like the world is at. And I think that that's fine.
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, it's yeah. So, I'm up for book suggestions for what to read next. I might just like go back to, it might be the time to like reread Lord of the Rings because, you know, got to do that once a year. But that, and you know, I think it's a good time for us to kind of segue into, the Claire book, which I have so many feelings about because I remember reading this as a youth, as a youngin, but, I didn't remember like the most of the plot line. But wow, I have so many thoughts and opinions.
Yeah, I didn't read this one. I think as I'm piecing it together, I think I was going into my freshman year of high school in 2010 or no, 2009. So I was like leaving middle school, going into high school. So I didn't read this book and I didn't read past Bratfest at Tiffany's when I was in middle school. And so now looking at this book, I'm coming to it only from a 24-year-old perspective, but you and I talked about this.
I don't know why I read it.
I mean, I don't know either, because you're older than I am.
Now I'm thinking about it. Yeah, I was like, wait, what? Why did I read this? Because I remember reading it. I remember it coming out. It must have come out before. There's no way it came out in 2000. No, because this came out prior. Okay, I have to look this up because I was like, I don't think I was 15 when I read this, but that would be the timeline. Okay, let me figure that out.
Yeah, I don't know when this book came out, but let's see. It came out in 2008. Okay, so I was in August of 2008, so I was in the eighth grade. I think it might have been the summer before I went into eighth grade. So that's like a normal time for me to have been reading this, I think. But I didn't read it. And you and I texted online, or you and I texted offline yesterday talking about it. And I agree with you that like when I had already finished it by the time that you and I were texting, and I was like, this book is everything. This book is so wild. I loved it so much. I think that I did a little ranking system in our notes of which books I liked best for which purposes. And I'm interested in hearing your thoughts on that.
Are we talking summer series books only?
Yeah. Only the summer series. Because the summer series are just so different from everything else.
Okay. They are so different. Okay. Yeah, we can go through that later at the end. We should definitely rank them at the end of this episode. But how this episode starts, just so you guys are aware, is that we are, I guess Claire has been in Orlando all summer already. And the reason that they're there ostensibly is to kind of fix up their house to sell it finally, which I don't know, like, okay, questions on that. Why didn't they sell it before they moved to Westchester? Because if they needed that amount of like money.
If this book came out in 2008, the housing bubble crisis.
Yes, exactly. But here's my thought. So did they hold on to it and move to Westchester and like rent it out? Because that would make sense to me. Because like you could rent it as furnished. And then I guess now that they have like officially made the guest house their own and are like staying in Westchester and like not going to Chicago because that never happened. But maybe that means that like this is the time to sell it. But it was weird to me.
I think that it's one part housing crisis, which can also explain why they needed to live in the Block's guest house. And like, I'm building this whole narrative behind the scenes in my mind where like housing bubble crisis happens. Jay loses his job. They need to move, but they can't sell the house because of the housing bubble crisis. So William offers him a job to move up to Westchester. They can live in the guest house. They won't have to pay rent. And then they can take their time fixing up and selling the house. And they also moved in timeline with the kids to go to school. So they were like, well, we'll just wait until summer break to sell the house because then we can all go back and say goodbye to the house. And like, you know, the kids aren't in school. So that's where my thought process is. And to your point about renting, I totally support that idea with the exception of the fact that it seems like Claire is very... Florida Claire seems very dirty to me.
Oh, okay. Yes. So segueing off of that, because I actually highlighted this in my, it's in the very first chapter. So we learn that Claire's room is like Hello Kitty themed, which, you know, it tracks. But when she's prepping, so basically she's been there all summer, but her friends have not been. So she's been working under top, which we'll get into later because there's so many things about Todd in this book
that I love so much.
But she's been working under Todd in like a small jobs capacity while her friends have been away at summer camp. And they get back, I guess it's like a month before she has to go back to Westchester. And so Claire has like prepped for them to come back. She's so excited to see her friends again because she hasn't seen them since she moved. And so what she's done to like prep for their reunion, and this made me so angry. First things first, her room. So to honor her friend's return, she's salted the carpet of her room, which is white shag carpet, with each of their glitter colors, which is blue for her friend Mandy, pink for her friend Sari, orange for Sarah, and green for herself. It looked like the orange bowl parade had melted on her floor. And I'm like, first of all, who has shag carpet in Florida? That sounds heinous. White shag carpet in a child's bedroom in Florida.
Well, this whole house seems like vintagey themed if you think about the way that the kitchen is described. So I think that it's like retro.
But just, I mean, like logistically, and I feel like I say this every time someone mentions having a white bedroom or like the way that like they have, especially because like with Massey and Bean, like that makes me anxious. But like, first of all, we didn't realize how bad glitter was for the environment back in 2009 when this came out. But glitter is horrible for the environment. It's just tiny plastic shards. And then that is going to be the hardest thing to clean up ever. And if they're selling the house, the person that's going to move in there is probably going to have to rip up that carpet in order to get the glitter out of the shag carpet.
Maybe they're ripping out the carpet anyway because it's white shag from a teenage girl. But yeah, it was between that and the fact that she describes her friends as being so comfortable that they're like, wearing the same pair of socks for 3 days around each other and you don't have to be insecure about it. And I was like, Claire, take a shower. This is really gross. But I did love the continuation of each girl having a signature color. It felt very cute and very true to middle school for me. And it felt sort of like the Florida version of each of the pretty committee having their own signature scents. I loved it. It was precious.
Yes. And so we see a little bit of like that, like, honestly, like, clickiness from Westchester kind of mirrored in so they're in Kissimmee, which, correct me if I ever say that incorrectly, because
I think that's correct, because I think that the TikTok that you sent me of that guy who's from there pronounced it that way.
He says it Kissimmee. Yeah. And so they're in Kissimmee and they are, I guess, like, I would say like the Florida version of Claire calls them her FBFFs, which are her Florida BFFs. And so there's a number of ways in which they like kind of mirror the PC, which, like you said, the color thing. And then they have an acronym, which is SACS, which is SACS, which I think is funny.
Well, when they were at
camp, I don't
know
if it was supposed to be like Saks Fifth Avenue, but like, yeah, when they were at camp, they were just SASS.
And when I thought about that, I was like, why would nobody just call them ass? Because the letters are A, S, and then another S. Like, why would you not just call them ass?
Because they, you know, that would be a great, like, behind their back nickname, but they definitely probably name themselves, which
just like the pretty committee.
You're not supposed to do. Yes. But they, so these girls show up, they're super excited to see Claire. They run to hug her, and she's all of a sudden aware of the fact that she had been doing sweaty yard work all day. And like, she doesn't lift her arms up to hug them. And they're all like, oh, is this like a New York City thing? I heard they're like a Westchester thing, because I heard they're cold up there, like physically cold. And Claire was like, basically, no, like, I'm just worried about BO. And they start giving her, like, basically from the get-go, these girls start giving her crap about how she's changed. Like, because she's obsessed with Massey, and there's all these pictures of the PC on her headboard, and like, and they're really drawing this like line in the sand, from the beginning, over like, kind of like, this is how you used to be. It's setting an expectation for Claire, I would say, to show that she hasn't changed, but that's not possible.
And it's also not
in this chapter, one thing I wanted to bring up. Oh, okay. So one, before we switch over, one thing I wanted to bring up was, when Claire's describing where the photos that she took with so she's got all these photos of the pretty committee on her headboard that she took with them. And when she describes where they took these photos, they're, piling the back of the Range Rover, cheering at soccer games, carving the Chanel logo out of snow, dangling tuna sashimi from their mouths, latte toasting at $6. And I was like, Lisa,
well, I
assumed, when have you ever cared
I assumed
about
that was like a
this?
Claire narration,
when have you
like
ever
making
said
a joke about how expensive
not said
Starbucks is.
Maybe, but I was just like, I highlighted it because I had to be like, why now? But so yeah, I think like the line that's been drawn in the sand by her friends from the beginning to kind of show like hold her to this standard of what she used to be. Something we see.
I think that it's unfair in two ways. A, because it's when she is in Westchester, she gives her Florida best friends the exact same treatment, where she has their pictures pinned up everywhere and she messages them all the time and like tells them about all of her fun stuff. Like, we see that throughout the story, is like them referencing emails that Claire has sent her over the past few years, or over the past year. And when the girls were at camp without Claire, Mandy comes back with a new nickname, where she's like, call me Amandy, because it sounds like I'm 16. And so it's like, not only is Claire changed, sure, that's fine, but like, you all have changed too. And that's normal. And that's part of growing up.
Yeah. The Amandy thing is super annoying, because that's not a name.
Not a name. Not only that, but they also like rag on Claire's movie from the jump, which is
for
super annoying.
I was literally just about to say that. This is where we learned that, yeah, I guess Dial Up for Loser was a huge box office fail, which that tracks.
It not only tracks, but like, if it weren't a huge box office fail, I think that we would see a stark difference in the way that Claire is treated, and also the amount of money that Claire has.
Oh, for sure. But I think I do also have questions about the money thing in general, because I guess maybe Judy and I forget her dad, which I forget his name now, Jay, Judy and Jay, probably if they are smart, they put that money from the movie into like a college fund for Claire, which would make sense. But kind of something that comes along. Basically, I'm like that. Okay, I'll get to that later of why I think it's interesting that Claire doesn't have any like funds at the moment. But pretty quickly, the girls, so SAS, so Sari, Sarah, and Amandy. Wait, question about that. Wouldn't it have been okay? Because she's just now going by Amandy. So she would have been, it would have been SMSC.
Well, they changed it. Like, they, she got the nickname while she was at camp. So maybe it was like first day of camp. They were like, Amandy. And then the SAS thing came from that. Like maybe the...
Okay. I thought that they had always been the acronym, but I guess, yeah, you're right. It just showed up then. So we learned that the girls are all super excited because they're all going to enter in. And if you guys remember from the prequel, which is, what was it? Charmed and Dangerous.
Yeah. Charmed and Dangerous, The Rise of the
We learned that the girls, so the Kissimmee girls are, obsessed with the Miss Kiss pageant because they all know the like last 5 years of winners. And this is the first year that they're allowed to compete as 12-year-olds, which I have so many questions about. What pageant allowed you start? Like, what is this? Toddlers and Tiaras? But like for 12-year-olds, like, I don't get it.
Not even that, but also that defines how old Claire is, because if she was still in Florida at this time last year, then that means that she was 11 when she moved to Westchester. And so all of this is just redefining the timeline for us in a way that I find very interesting. So they're going to enter as 12-year-olds, and Claire initially doesn't want to because she thinks the competition is really going to pull her friendship apart. And that's apparently been historically the case for every group of friends who's ever entered this Miss Kiss pageant.
Including sisters.
Yes, including twin sisters. But then Amandy reminds her that the prize for winning this pageant is a check for $1,000.
And which the reason, she needs.
Yeah, the reason why Claire has been doing all these odd jobs with Todd's odd job company is because Massey had sent out this shopping list, essentially, of approved fashions for the eighth grade year. And she's like, if I want to be able to buy like even one thing, I'm going to need to work all summer. And the logistics of Todd managing Claire doing all the odd jobs, like Todd doesn't seem to chip in at all. He seems to be more of a manager type.
And he takes a larger cut than she does everything.
Like, he takes like what, 60% and she gets 40? Yeah.
I think it's probably something more like he takes 55, she gets 45, because I think for one job it was like he gets paid, I think it was for walking the dog, it was like $13 an hour or $13 for 30 minutes, which is like pretty good, honestly. But he gets 7 and she gets 6, which I don't know how that math checks out. But basically, he gets more than
I don't know why his parents allow, like why their parents allow this. If my parents saw that, I don't think that they know.
But I do think I want to review the shopping list real quick because I remember reading this and being like, yes, this is my lodestone. This is like what I'm going to work off of for going forward because I
read it because I have a question.
Well, I love the fact that she sent this out as like a mandate. And I also, if you guys remember in the summer series for Kristen, when she brings up skin, like snake skin and stuff, it's because she was like the last like email Massey sent me. It was about like she said this and then she recommends that to Ripple. But so this is the shopping list, and it's Massey's. Says back to school shopping list for pretty committee eyes only, delete after purchasing. Acceptable jeans, J Brand Joe's, Ernest Sewn, True Religion, Paige, William Rast, AG, and Rich and Skinny. Acceptable tops are from CNC, Vince, DVF, Splendid, Lamb, Theory, Ralph Lauren, Ella Moss, Mark, and Juicy. Anything vintage as long as it doesn't smell like cat pee, mothballs, or old lady. Footwear, Uggs, weekends only. Mark, Michael Kors, Calvin, anything sold on the 7th floor of Barney's, no kids, RIP Barney's, sad, tear. Makeup, must be bought at a DS, Claire, that's department store, not drugstore. Anything by Be Pretty Cosmetics is off limits, they're dead to me. Also off limits, all things shiny. Shiny is my back to school look. Anything purchased before June of this year, except for vintage and jewelry. Don't buy any silver charm bracelets from Tiffany. You'll understand why when I see you. Text with questions, 35 days till we're together. Yay, talk to you later.
I thought it was cute that Massey's little like notes to the rest of the pretty committee where like Ralph gets a shout out to Alicia, no keds for Claire and department store versus drugstore. I also thought it was cute how she alludes to the charm bracelets that they're going to get in Bratfest at Tiffany's for the new pretty committee. But also, there's a typo in my edition, at least. I don't know if there's a typo in yours, but she spells Paige as P-A-G-E. Paige Denham is P-A-I-G-E.
Oh, yeah, she does. Yeah, I didn't even notice that. But yes, you are correct. Interesting. I mean, my thing with this is that, well, we don't see her mention snakeskin, which is not, it does not fall in line, but that was something that she brought up. And then I also like, so a lot of the designers she mentions are like American designers, which I understand, but a lot of them are like kind of like the cultural cachet that they had or like in this time period does not necessarily exist anymore. Especially when it comes
like
to
True Religion jeans.
Well, no.
Juicy Couture.
I like Juicy Couture, like Michael Kors, I would say. Calvin Klein, you know, I think if these are all brands that have like the, and Marc Jacobs even, it's like, sorry, I was actually reading an article about this. It's like the brands that have like multi-level brands underneath them. And then like, when you think about like Marc by Marc Jacobs, Calvin by Calvin Klein, or like, you know, the like stuff that
Michael
can be
sold by Michael Kors. Yeah, exactly.
Or, yeah. Or like TJ Maxx kind of stuff. And so like there are ways for Claire's to subvert the system, but like
I would love that. That would be a really interesting plot line. And I will say, to Calvin Klein's credit, they did go through a renaissance recently, like 2-3 years
ago.
Oh
my god, with Raf Simons. Yes, it was amazing. The Raf, okay, I fully agree with you, because that was like, I know exactly the season you're talking about. It was the like satin button downs with the fun patches. It was so good. They really,
I was talking more about everyone wearing Calvin Klein underwear, but yeah, also that.
Oh, okay. Well, I love Calvin Klein by Raf is fantastic. But so that is like a pretty good baseline for what we see when the girls go. So when I say the girls, I mean SAS and Claire go to Dress Barn. Like I brought up in the last episode, I told you guys, I remembered Dress Barn.
I was
Barn.
Geeked when I read this chapter because you had mentioned it. And I was like, oh, well, they must have made Dress Barn sound so appealing for Claire to be that hype about going to Dress Barn one time. And I read this chapter and I was appalled. I was like, what did Claire think Dress Barn was supposed to be? Because Claire made it sound horrible.
Let me walk you through it. And so they go to Dress Barn to pick out their, like, basically, like, audition or, like, entry outfits for the Miss Kiss pageant. And here's why I think I was interested. So they go in and all of them are drawn. They're like, we want florals. No girl has ever won in, like, black. Like, there are so many reasons for why.
Mandy has done like a statistical review of the
which
most
I appreciated.
Like, the past winners.
Like,
I thought it was, I like the dedication.
Same. And so like, I thought that was like, so they basically were all going for like bright, fun colors, with florals and pattern, like, you know, fun things like that. But Claire realizes she like kind of has a leg up here. So she reaches out to Massey and is like, I have to go to a gala. What do you recommend for something, like fun and flirty? And Massey, this is why I think I went. So Massey suggests that she gets, a Miu Miu ivory dress with floral shaped sequin embellishments. It's feminine without being overly girly and can be dressed up or down to suit the mood. Great with Stella McCartney bag and Jimmy Choo shoes. 100% silk. Inserts are 75% acetate, 25% viscose. Dry clean only. Note Italian sizing. And so Claire starts looking for like that, like those dress labels, that kind of stuff. And she stumbles upon like a dupe of it. And she's like, oh my God, yes, absolutely. This is perfect. But her friends come and see her in this like ivory dress with like paillettes. And they're like, wow, you really have changed. Like no one would ever really wear that.
They call her dress lumpy oatmeal. And I found that deeply insulting because as I read this book and I was like negotiating with myself about the way that Claire navigates these relationships with her Florida friends and with Massey, I'm like, okay, yeah, maybe Claire has changed and maybe Claire is a little bit like hypercritical of her friends, but her friends dish it back to her really like at least as much, and they instigate a lot of it too.
They really do. And this is a perfect example of it, because basically what ends up happening, also I found what I think is the perfect approximation of the dress on Bergdorf right now, and I'm going to send it to you so you can insert it in the show notes, because it's like, this is exactly it. But so she sees the other girls' dresses, and something I really appreciated for Claire is that she is actually like, I mean, to a certain extent, she's pretty generous to these girls when they're being pretty mean to her, because she is like pretty good at recognizing like all of their, she'll be like, you know, Amandi's like blue eyes stood out so well in the red dress that she chose, or like, you know, she's pretty nice to them.
See, I have the opposite interpretation where like Claire will give her, it felt to me like Claire was giving concessions to the girls as a way to make herself feel better about being like, Amandi's never gotten an eyebrow wax and she's hairy and a monster.
Okay. Okay.
And then she'd be like, but at least her blue eyes are really pretty. And I'm like, Claire.
Yeah. Okay. Well, basically what I was thinking is that like, she's recognizing that, so I think it's like that Amandi and then like Sarah have picked dresses that look really, really cute on them. But Sari has picked let me read the description of it. Sari has a dress that's pale pink, pale yellow, and pale green paisley up, and so Claire says ew, and then has to explain her way out of it by saying that means extremely wearable, which no. But it kind of as like retaliation in order to prove that she hasn't changed, Amandi is the one who's really like the instigator here. I feel like she makes her switch dresses with Sari. So Sari gets to wear the Miu Miu knockoff and Claire has to wear the good and plenty throw up looking dress is what she says. And Claire does it. And also the thing that bums me out the most is that all the other dresses were on sale except for the like good and plenty throw up dress, which was $54. And like the rest of them were super cheap. And I was like, y'all know Claire didn't have any money.
But none of them have any money, I think, is part of it. And also, like, I don't know. I thought this chapter was really interesting, both in Claire trying to, like, the passages where Claire is trying to imagine the Pretty Committee being there and sort of seeing the ways that the Pretty Committee has sort of infiltrated her mental space, not in, like, a mean way, but them talking about, like, the feeling of the fabric and how Claire now has elevated taste when it comes to, like, quality materials and stuff like that. But also when it comes to her internal narration of the other girls' dresses, and she's like, Claire literally bit her tongue to keep from commenting. Had her friends always had such bad taste? Should she intervene? Was this how Massey felt around her? And that was so funny to me, not only because Massey would never bite her tongue around Claire, but also as a person who, like, I have different style. Like, everyone I know has a different style. And there are things that I love from some of my friends' wardrobes. And there are things that I'm like, you know what? That's not for me, but that's whatever. And I think that there's a distinct line that you have to draw as an individual person between like acknowledging, you know what, that's not my favorite out, like that's not my favorite dress, but if you love it, that's awesome. And it looks great on you. It's great for your style, and genuinely being like, no, that's a bad pick and you need to put it back.
I think that there is something, I mean, I would want, if we were shopping together and you were like, no, I'd want you to tell me that, because like, it's different than being like, so like, I know you have that Ted Baker dress that you absolutely love and I think looks amazing on you, but I would never wear something like that because it's not my style, but I can recognize that like, damn, that looks great on Courtney kind of thing.
You know what's really sad? I still haven't been able to wear it yet.
Well, we will find an occasion for you to wear it because it's so cute. And it's kind of the same thing where it's like, I also feel like my sense of style changes like every 3 months, but that's just kind of who I am. I liked some of the outfits that her friends were wearing. I thought they were super cute and like something that a 12-year-old should be wearing in Florida in the summer.
These all feel very Florida 12-year-old and Florida cute. And I'm like, okay, that's cool. You know what? They are in Florida. Know your audience.
Exactly. And so my consensus on this book is that everybody sucked except for Massey, which is, we'll get there. But they're all like, they're all sabotaging each other. Like that none of them are like, super kind to each other.
I don't know if I put the same amount of responsibility on Sarah and Sari, because they are interchangeable to me, and they like, I do not know what the difference is between them.
It's like Mina and Heather. It's like Lane, Mina, and Heather, where we just talk about like Lane and the other two. And so basically what ends up happening is Claire gets back to her house and like a snarky UPS guy is there to drop off like a trunk of clothes, and Claire was like, oh my god, Massey heard my text about having to go to this like gala and she sent me all these amazing clothes to wear instead. How do I convince? So cute.
Which was so cute to me. I thought, so, because when she texted Massey the first time, in my notes, because I had obviously, I was reading this book for the first time, so I didn't know what was going to happen, but I was like, I'm sure if she, like, actually asked Massey, Massey would send her the perfect outfit to wear.
Agreed.
Because Massey loves styling people.
But I also think that that would have been too much for Claire's confidence. But, so, yeah. Claire and Todd devise a plan. So that she can wear the clothes that Massey has sent her. So she wears her Good and Plenty throw-up dress to the back parking lot of a Publix, which seems... And she, like, has all this nostalgia thought for it. And I'm like, you know Publix? I know Publix. I like Publix. There's nothing like a good Publix
sale. It's a grocery store. It's great. It's a grocery store. I don't know why people are so obsessed with grocery stores. Like, when... Okay, so Claire and I both went to GW, and there were a lot of students there from Philadelphia and from New Jersey.
Oh, the Wegmans people.
And they were obsessed with Wawa.
Oh, the Wawa, yes. But then also the upstate New York.
And then a Wawa opened...
The Wegmans people are also crazy.
But, like, people just get on this, like, cult-like fascination with certain grocery stores. And I maybe have that about Stu Leonard's. But Stu Leonard's is different.
Stu Leonard's is
great. Stu Leonard's is an amusement park that just happens to also sell.
My first time in a Stu Leonard's was life-changing, I would have to say. They have these, like, rosemary sweet potato chips that are so, so good. And also, like, no one wants, like, if you could have a Chiquita banana singing to you as you go grocery shopping, it's amazing. I agree with you. Stu Leonard's is, like,
but, like, that's the only instance in which I understand being, quote, unquote, obsessed with a grocery store.
Well, I mean, it used to be a big thing in the South back when this was existed, would be to get a I'm Big on the Pig shirt from Piggly Wiggly. But those don't exist anymore. I used to have a bunch of shirts from Piggly Wiggly. You don't even know what that is.
I understand that it's a grocery store because I think I read, what book am I thinking of? Do you know what book I'm thinking?
Because of Winn-Dixie?
Yes.
Yes.
Which is about a Winn-Dixie, not about a Piggly Wiggly. So
I know. I don't know where you got there, but I know for some reason my brain knew that that was what you were talking about.
A store with a silly name.
John Mayer's in that movie. Fun fact. Not John Mayer. Dave Matthews is in that movie.
Oh.
Fun fact. Which is fun. And Annalise, no, I don't know. We're going to figure that out. But now the girls are describing the ivory dress that Claire picked out as looking like it has cookie crisps on it, which is nostalgic as well. But they're there to practice their walks, right? And pretty much immediately, they start getting, like, pelted with brown, some, I don't even know.
It's what iced tea and water balloons.
Okay, iced tea and water balloons. And Todd completely misses Claire, gets everyone else. And they are immediately so mad because they know this trick. Because basically Claire's horrible at plans. We've said this in the past. We will continue to say
it. Yeah, Claire needs to
future.
Stop trying to be a mastermind, just like Alicia needs to stop trying to be an alpha, and Dylan needs to stop trying to be a size zero. Everyone just needs to be who they are.
Exactly. But I guess in the past, Massey spilled a latte on Kristen's Easter dress so she didn't have to wear it to, like, a dance or something. And the girls know this because I guess Claire had emailed them being like, haha, wasn't this so funny and smart? And so they know that she did this on purpose. And not only that, Todd has been filming the whole thing and put it up on YouTube and it goes viral.
Yeah, I guess like 50,000 views. And I'm like, Todd, you never intended for this to be helpful. Todd is always in it for himself. Todd's looking out for number one all the time.
Yeah. But so Claire feels so bad for them. The next day is when they go to sign up to join this pageant, and she wears the, like, ugly dress that she hates as, like, a form of penance almost. And she gets there. She runs into Sarah and Mandy. But she's pretty much pulled to the front of the line immediately because this woman, Lorna, recognizes her from Dial for Loser because it's been the number one rental at the Blockbuster near them for the last, like, 5 weeks, and asks Claire, she says that they had sent requests up to Claire's, like, management to ask her to be a celebrity judge and hadn't heard anything back. And
they sent it to the Westchester estate. And I'm like, if you did this, like, 2 months ago, then yeah, nobody's there because the blocks are all in, like, on Long Island.
The Hamptons, yeah.
They're in Florida, so... But why wouldn't you call? Like, leave a voicemail.
Yeah, exactly. But so Claire is basically, like, she's exempt from joining the pageant because of like her fame status, but also she gets a she'll get a $500 stipend for judging. So she immediately agrees because she's like, this is great. But then she looks over and she sees Mandy and Sarah, and she's like, oh no, I just made a huge mistake, because she's gonna have to try to pick between three of them.
Well, not only that, but like before she gets offered this judge role, and the woman is like talking about how Dial L, like how she recognizes Claire from Dial L, Amanda is like, or Amandy, sorry, that's such a stupid name, is like, we're more famous than Claire is. Her movie was a total flop. Our video of getting pelted with iced tea water balloons got 50,000 views. Like, you should be asking us. Like, you should be talking about how famous we are.
Yeah, and they've been so mean to her.
So much. They are so mean to her. Like, even if this movie, like, even if this movie only made $1 million and it hardly even covered the cost of, like, the entire production of it, this is a big accomplishment. And it's a bigger accomplishment than winning this rinky-dink local pageant. And Amandy sucks, and I dislike her.
Yeah, and so, but then the thing that really bugs me is, and we see this pretty much immediately, is these girls flip their switches real fast, and they just start sucking up to Claire, like, really bad. So they show up at her house the next day, and they come into her room where another mysterious UPS package has been dropped off by the snarky UPS man again. He's like, oh, Butler's off today. And he's
because all
like,
of the
so
boxes
rude.
Are... addressed to the Lions estate, and they're like, this is a regular house.
Yeah. But so the girls, they show up, they're like really, Claire's kind of like annoyed with them because she's been going through the Massey boxes of clothes from Massey, and they join her, and they immediately start like pawing everything. They're like, oh, this is so awesome. And she kind of like offers it up. She does. But I think it's because she's supposed to be like such a peacekeeper and a pushover.
Yeah, she's a real people pleaser. And she wants to like, we saw this when she was trying to bring the Pretty Committee and the Mac together in one of the eighth grade books. But what really bugged me about this, I felt for Claire so much in this chapter where she's like, all I want to do is text Massey, see what this is all about, and also like open these boxes in private because I'm a selfish, like, I would not want to share with my friends.
I wouldn't either.
If this were
happening
to me. But also, what either Sari or Sarah is like trying to, they're trying to like bribe Claire with
snacks.
Yes,
I did want to bring this up because Sari tries to bribe her with things, but it's like disgusting. She
offers her like barbecue sunflower seeds, and then they start pawing at Massey. Yeah, and then they start pawing at Massey's silk blouses, and I'm like, Sarah, wash your hands. Yeah,
exactly. And then she offers her like the last sip of her Dr. Thunder, which is a Dr. Pepper ripoff, which is funny. But they also give her like candied lips that were from their like welcome bags for the competition. And so basically they're there and they're all having like a great fun time where they're trying on all of Massey's clothes and like dancing around, having a good old time. But what ends up happening is Massey shows up and walks in on all of them in her clothing, and they're doing like a could I be wearing any more clothes thing, where they're putting on all of the clothes like on top of each other and like wobbling around because they think it's super funny, and just the idea of like them doing that with like leather Gucci Tom Ford pants would just makes me so sad.
And Massey is justifiably pissed. And I say justifiably not only because, like, that's a violation of, like, don't touch my stuff, even though, like, Claire didn't really understand that that was what was happening. Because, so, backtracking, when before Massey shows up, the girls are like, why would Massey send all this stuff to your house? And Claire is trying to come up with a reason because she obviously doesn't know. And she posits that, well, maybe she sent the clothes because she's excited for y'all to be in this pageant that Claire has not told Massey about. And so you'll get to wear these clothes. And so then the girls offer to do a photo shoot for Massey
in
the
Publix.
Loading dock of the Publix. And I wanted to scream. But then when Massey shows up, Amandy is like, oh, I'm going to take off like the skirt that I was wearing. And underneath the skirt, she was wearing a pair of Massey's Cosabella boy shorts. And I'm like, you put on her underwear. No,
that's disgusting.
No, a crime. And then Amandy goes, oh, well, my name is Amandy, which sounds like Massey, so you and I are basically the same. and oh, you're so nice. I knew you'd be so nice and so pretty, prettier than you were in your pictures. And the Mandy Massey thing gave me serious Rassy vibes from Ripple.
Yes,
from Kristen.
Yes.
Like, it was so funny.
But with less self-awareness, honestly, because Ripple like kind of knew what she was doing and Mandy is just being obnoxious. I don't understand how you could be so unaware of someone's facial expressions, because Claire, the second Massey opens the door, Claire knows that she is in deep. She's in trouble. And Mandy is just like, oh my God, it's so great to see you. We're so happy you're here. They hug her and they're like, oh my God, I knew it was a Westchester thing, not hugging back. Like,
and she's like, it's not because it's a Westchester thing. It's because you're wearing my underwear, you freak.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, so Massey's like understandably not thrilled. And then they go downstairs and Jay and Judy had bought like a peanut butter ice cream cake. This I have so many questions about, and I know that you did too. Okay, so they bought a peanut butter ice cream cake and they go down and the top says welcome for Massey and the bottom says Miss Kiss for the girls. And they go to cut into it. Massey's first question is it fat free or like, is it full fat or low fat? And they're all like, why would we have a low fat ice cream cake? And they're like super disparaging of that comment for her. And then also she goes, okay, it's fine anyway, I'm allergic to nuts. And I'm like, we know that. But then Claire says that she catches Massey eating nuts over chocolate Luna bars all the time. And I'm like, okay, what's going on here? Because we know from the very first book that Massey is allergic to nuts, which is why she could not test the, what was the...
The lip gloss.
The name of the... Yeah, do you remember the name of it? I don't know. Glambition.
Glambition, yes.
The Glambition lip glosses, Massey could not test them because she's allergic to nuts. And so the fact that, like, she smelled the peanut butter... Also, like, I want to know how allergic she is. Is she, like, too allergic to be near it? Also, she's obviously not that allergic if she's eating like chocolate peanut butter Luna bars. And so I have so many questions about that. But she doesn't eat any of the ice cream cake because she's like, Massey's annoyed. And also the whole time she's being like quiet and calm and chill. And like Claire's like, I expected her to be a lot more like mean, but like Massey, all she's asking, like, she's like, what are they talking about? And Claire's like, I'll tell you later. But Massey's like not really being that incendiary the whole time. She does say like she has one comeback for the girls that like Todd tries to high five her for, that Jay's like, no, stop. But like I'm surprised that she's not like saying, she's, you know, she's not doing any of the do I look like a blah blah blah, then why are you blah blah blah. Like, she's not being that mean.
So a couple of thoughts on this. First, I thought that maybe the nuts over chocolate Luna bars didn't have any actual nuts in it. And then I Googled it and the advertisement said now with 3 times more nuts. So that's wrong. But so my thought about the allergy thing, because I highlighted this when I read it, is that perhaps she's only allergic to almonds because the ingredient in the lip gloss was almond oil. And so maybe she's only allergic to almonds and she can eat other nuts. I don't know. But also when Judy like lights all of these candles for the girls and is like, okay, so you're gonna like blow them out on three or whatever, and then Mandy leans over and blows them out without waiting for anyone else.
Yeah.
And Massey whispers to Claire and she's like, I thought we were all gonna blow them out together. And I felt so bad for Massey. I felt so bad for her because
I mean, like, Mandy's the worst.
Mandy sucks, but like, even though that doesn't seem like a thing that Massey would be hurt by, like, you can tell that there's something else going on with Massey in this chapter where she's like, clearly she's looking to reach out to her friend and she's not getting what she's like, what she needs out of Claire. And this is what brings me to like the integral, what I think is an integral question about Massey in this book, which I don't know if you want to address it later or now, which is about like why Massey is there.
I mean, I think we can address it now. So apparently Claire knows, or Claire has heard something about why Massey is there, which is that William and Kendra, sorry, the parent names are just not filed in my brain correctly today. But Kendra and William are on a like river cruise in Europe, and like Massey wasn't included, which I am not sure, because Massey says that like later on, Massey says that she was invited, she just didn't want to go. But I don't think that that is correct.
I had questions about this because as we know from the prequel, Massey's parents are in Paris, and Massey had been invited to go with them to Paris, and she was even allowed to invite all of her friends from the Anabees. And Anna said no, so that's why Massey wasn't there. So it's not that there's a precedent of Massey's parents just like abandoning her, because they invite her to extravagant trips all the time. So when it comes down to like, did Massey's parents invite her? It's not out of character that they would have invited her, and that Massey, for whatever reason, would have not gone. But if we look at Massey's character arc over the entire series, I think that if we had characterized Kendra and William as being a bit more like hands-off parenting-y, and they like actually abandoned Massey a lot and like went on all these trips, then Claire, like Massey's attachment issues and her obsession with like being the most important friend in all of her friends' lives would make more sense.
Would make a lot more sense. So maybe that is, because also when we think about like the Charmed and Dangerous, the prequel, was a bit of a retcon too. Like, we've talked about that before, where so I mean, I think it does make more sense. And also just like the fact that they're not like great.
I think they try, but I think their idea of like good parenting is like throw money at the problem, or like give very, like Kendra gives Massey all of those like self-help books and CDs, instead of like actually sitting down and talking to her about her problem the way that Dylan's mom talks to her about that like boy problem.
They're trying to like generate like an autodidact kind of system where Massey learns to parent herself. And I think a lot of only children do kind of learn to like, you know, create their own narratives and things because of the fact that they are. And I think that, you know, that's, anyway, aside from that, Massey is there because her parents are no longer in the Hamptons. And so Massey goes with Claire for the first night of the Miss Kiss pageant, which is called the Butt Kiss, which is like the time when all of the girls get to meet the judges. And Massey is wearing what Claire describes as,
I think it's, yeah, Mandy calls it like a motorcycle rider funeral outfit, which I disagree with, but whatever.
Exactly. So because I disagree. Massey's wearing, she's got a men's tie through the belt loops of her black satin shorts paired with a matching vest. She's the only one wearing the forbidden color, which is black. But so Claire is being led around by Lorna, who's the like pageant organizer. She's meeting all of these girls. We can see that pretty early on, SAS are saying like, this is our best friend. And Lorna's like, hey, you might want to review the like section where it talks about friends and like, and, participating in the pageant. And, pretty early. And then Massey takes it upon herself where she was like, oh, you know, I want to win this pageant. So she walks up to Lorna, twirls the purple streak around her finger, and immediately gets in.
And I just have many questions about that, because how does Lorna, this pageant director in Kissimmee, Florida, know what the purple streak means?
I think that like the next couple of chapters we can kind of like generally like gloss through, in that basically what happens is that Claire has decided she's going to try to be as equanimous as possible and give everyone eights for everything. But that means that she needs to bring Sorry Sarah and Mandy up to an eight, so that when she gives them all eights, it's fair. So she spends a lot of time with them, helping them like get up to what she thinks an eight would be, as well as she also helps Massey. All of this is against the rules and under the table. And when SAS come over, they like try to distract Claire so they can read her judge's binder, which is so cheating and so horrible. And Claire knows she's being used.
And they also go back through Massey's stuff. They like lay down on Massey's bed and like use her eye mask and like touch all of her stuff. Ugh. And like, stop touching Massey's stuff.
And they say mean things about Massey. Massey says mean things about them. Claire really tries to help Massey when they go shopping, and Massey wants to buy this Garen Ford dress, and Claire's like, no, you should really pick this theory dress. It's pink. It'll be a little bit better for like the vibes.
Also, they drive all the way to the Saks in Miami, and I'm like, why are you driving that far? It's insane.
Is there a Saks in Kissimmee?
I mean, that's where Disney is, so I feel like it can't be that difficult to find.
Maybe there's like a Nordstrom, and maybe that's not
a department store of some sort. Like, I just don't feel like you have to drive all the way to Miami.
So we don't see,
but this is also 2008, so I don't know.
Yeah, what we don't see in Miami is we don't see exactly what Massey buys, because Claire's recommended what she thinks, and then Massey already is, by the time she like checks back in, she's been zoning out. Massey's already like,
and I haven't thought about this when we get to it.
Yeah. But and I just think that's, you know, I have a thought about that as well. And so Claire's really like trying her darndest to like help everyone. And her main suggestions are, so I guess Sari has a really hard time
getting to the point when she's giving answers to questions. And so Claire has asked her questions and started pinching her every time she responds so that she answers quicker, which will come in, which will be important later. Sarah has no rhythm. And so Claire has suggested every time Sarah tries to dance, she looks like she's like having a seizure, apparently. And so Claire has recommended one of the three categories. The first one is a quick round answer, like question and answer section. The second one is an interpretive dance of current events, which is weird. And then the third one is like the beauty session of it. So
there's also a question, like a segment, and it wasn't described necessarily, but Claire kind of glosses over this when it comes to the beauty part, where they will be judged on their lip imprints.
Oh, yes, you're right. Because they have to like leave, I guess they leave, instead of like a handprint for celebrities in Hollywood, it's like they leave a lip print in cement, which seems not something you should do.
Safe. Yeah.
But so these girls, and so that's another reason, is because I guess one of the girls like has no upper lip. And so Claire's trying to help her with that. And she's like going to rub cinnamon on her lips to like make it more, it seems wrong. And then she's recommending that Mandy get an eyebrow wax, which I started getting my eyebrows waxed when I was like 11. So not out of the realm of possibilities. I also don't know why, because my eyebrows, I don't wax my eyebrows anymore.
Yeah, no, I'll have to ask my mom when I first started getting my eyebrows waxed, but I got my eyebrows waxed, I think, probably pretty young, but
yeah, I mean,
I was in like sixth or seventh grade.
But Claire's trying to give them, so she's given them like heaps and heaps of advice and they still want more. They're like really manipulative of her. And
basically like want to guarantee that they're going to get the highest scores. I'm like, girls, she can't do that. All win.
Yeah. And so the day of the pageant is upon us and it is super, super hot out. So Claire's like, wow, everyone's really sweaty and it stinks.
It's August in Florida.
And it's like, yeah, it's like 103 degrees. It's the
grossest place to be.
And so the first round of the pageant goes by and it's okay. Claire is given most of the time she's not asking her friends the questions, which is fine, but she does ask Massey and she deliberately mispronounces Massey's name and says Macy, which is annoying. But
she offers like feedback on Massey's question and Lorna shoots her a look and is like, stop talking back to the contestants.
Because yes.
Massey was asked like, when do you know when a girl becomes a woman? Which I thought was the weirdest question.
So weird.
And she says when she gets her first visa.
Yes, I agree. And then Claire says travel visa, correct? That's so good. Travel, so good. But there is one contestant who makes it fairly far whose whole thing is anti-terrorism. And I was like, what do you want to do when you grow up? And she's like, I want to fight the war on terror and win. And I was like, I highlighted the first time it was brought up and I was like, oh wow, okay. And then so I'll get to
for her interpretive her dance she does,
yeah, well yeah, I was gonna wait to get to that. But yeah,
well, I'm just gonna talk about Amandy's question, but yeah.
Yes. So Amandy's question, would you want to take that one?
Amandy's question was like, who's the most famous person, the most popular person in the world? It wasn't even most famous.
She says
the most
God.
Popular person. And she goes, God. Lacey, what?
Yeah, that was gross. I hated that.
It was so funny.
But so the whole time this is happening, Sari's like fidgeting really bad. And Claire's like, what's going on? And it turns out that she has put their family's pet crab down the back of her dress. And it's like pinching her so she can like say the answers correctly. But she's having an allergic reaction to it at the same time. And so like she's disqualified and she's taken back to like the medic's tent. And everyone's like, and she answers, she's like, I thought it would help me answer quicker if I had someone to pinch me. And so I put a crab down my dress. And her dad's like furious with her. And I was like, that's so bad.
Yeah, animal abuse, again, rampant in these books.
So rampant.
I'm sorry.
And also just Claire had like obviously like made this so much more of a problem than it was in the beginning. Because now like Sari is so insecure that she feels like she needs to like physically hurt herself. But she does. So she
it's
doesn't
not Claire's fault that Sari's a dumbass. I'm sorry. I don't hold Claire responsible for that. Like Sari should know not to put a... Like, she should just, like, put a hair tie around her wrist and just, like,
slap it herself. Maybe.
Yeah.
So that was the first round. So Sari doesn't make it to the second round. But the rest of Claire's friends do. Massey, Amandy, and Sarah. As well as Gracie, which is this redhead who's, like, super bouncy and, like, has always wanted to be Miss Kiss, and she's like actually really nice and says she thinks she's going to excel in the dance round. And anyway, and then Wendy, the girl who wants to fight the war on terror. And so for their current, like their, I think it's like current issue, current event thing, they have to like do an interpretive dance. And so Gracie's interpretive dance is on obesity in America. And she's dancing to the sound of someone eating potato chips, drinking soda, and eating greasy food. And it's fused into a rhythmic beat. And she's like...
And I hated this a lot. It
was maybe so uncomfortable.
Also, Claire's narration points out the fact that, like, the entire audience seems, like, rapt and also in shock of Gracie's dance because they were like, oh, yeah, obesity, it's a really big problem. But Claire's narration is like, these are the people Gracie is talking about. And I'm like, this sucks so bad.
It does suck so bad. But it's supposedly a really beautiful dance and, like, it goes over very well. And so then... Wendy also does hers, and Wendy's is she's dressed in like army fatigues and like ready to do this dance against, like, she says, my issue is terrorism. Wendy stepped forward dressed in camouflage miniskirt, matching razor back tank and 3-inch platforms. Her long limbs had been slicked in a bronzing oil. Her eye makeup was smoky and her hair had been teased to Pamela Anderson proportions. Does she want to fight terrorists or seduce them? With no music, just several grunts and hi-yahs, Wendy busted out a series of karate kicks that would only prove one thing to the enemy, that Wendy preferred thong underwear to full coverage.
Ew!
I hate it! 12. So
who has indoctrinated this anti-terrorism rhetoric into their 12-year-old?
They live in Florida. I'm telling you right now, that's not unusual.
I know. This seems like a weird time to be talking about terrorism, but we're gonna
Okay, so, yes, I agree. Terrorism, domestic terrorism, still very much a problem in America. But did you, when you were in high school, like, was there one kid who was, like, really
into
the military?
Oh, yeah. I remember. He was also really scary. There was also, I mean...
They're always scary. Well, if you're, like, that into, the wars and the military. He was in our AP US history class, and then he left the class after... a month or two, because he realized that we weren't just going to be talking about wars and, like, war tactics. And I'm like, yeah, we're going to be talking about, like, a whole bunch of stuff, like how slavery is bad.
Yeah, I mean, the kid in my high school, like, issued a fake bomb threat. Like, he was scary.
Oh, no, that's worse. Nope, very that's worse
scary.
Than what I said.
And a lot of people didn't come to school that day, and I was like, Mom, I don't want to go to school. And she was like, you have to go to school. It's a fake bomb threat. Like, you're not going to do anything. And so I went, and the whole day I was just like, ah! Because I also
Kathy,
was like,
no!
He also, like, issued a list, and I was like, no.
Were you on it?
I didn't get a look at it. I think I was like, I don't want to know, because if I know, it's gonna be bad. But
wow, that sucks.
Yeah, it was awful. Anyway, we shouldn't indoctrinate our children into, like, any kind of military.
Yeah, let your 12-year-old be 12 instead of worrying about fighting terrorism themselves.
Yeah. So Sarah's issue is the earthquake that scientists predict will hit California in the next 30 years, because Claire has basically told her to do this because she's just going to do Twist and Shout by the Beatles by thrashing across the stage covered in mud. And
yeah, Claire had tried to give her some good advice where it was like, do like a slow build where there's like a moment of peace and then there's like this anticipation. And Sarah sort of throws that out. What was Sarah's originally, what was her original topic, do you remember?
I don't remember. I don't know if we ever heard that, which is totally unfair because then Claire just gave her like the entire plan, which tracks. But she basically is thrashing so hard that the medics come on.
Do you know found it.
What is it?
She was interpreting the whole bee crisis.
Aww.
Her song was The Flight of the Bumblebee. Aww. And her whole dance was just running around the room in circles, flapping her arms, and then doing the little like ballerina pirouette thing.
That's
and then
cute.
Falling.
I kind of like that.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that's cute, but also, I don't know. Claire did give her the whole idea. And
I also
Claire
don't.
Helps her friends cheat too much.
Yeah, I think the Beatles Twist and Shout is not the what I would do for an interpretive dance.
I wouldn't do any of these things as an interpretive dance. That's
no,
a stupid idea.
She ends up convulsing so much on stage that the medics come and like remove her because they think that she's hurt, and she's like, I'm fine, I'm not done yet. And but they like physically remove her from the stage, so we know that Sarah is not moving on. And so then all we have left is Amandi and Massey, which
we'll see going forward is going to be kind of the thing. And Amandi has gotten bangs. And Claire's like, she looks great with these bangs. I didn't suggest it, but wow, she looks so good. And she did a beautiful dance on global warming. And then Massey is the last person to go. She's dressed
in do you want to talk about what happens when... Oh, wait.
Not yet. That's before? That was when they did the model walk.
I thought it was a dance portion.
Literally, the dance portion is given three sentences. Amandi and her flattering new bangs were next. She managed to touch the crowd with her beautifully portrayed account of global warming. It was an ew performance, maybe even nine worthy, which is eight worthy is what Claire uses ew for going forward. So that's what that means. But then Massey's next. She's wearing a white shift dress that had been patched together using several different PETA t-shirts, which seems incongruous with Massey in general because PETA's big thing was like no fur back then. And Massey, like, I feel like she would not fit that.
But also PETA is not a great organization now, as most of us know. But I think that during 2008, it was more about like who's the sexiest vegetarian who can then like pose naked on like this cover. And so I think that was probably where Massey's head was at, is like what's going to be the most name worthy.
Also, Legally Blonde 2. Did you watch Legally
Never
Blonde?
Never saw 2? It. I didn't watch Legally Blonde 1.
Well, the whole issue in Legally Blonde 2 was makeup testing on animals. And so that is Massey's issue, is she's going against makeup testing on animals. And what I would like to say here is she's been on stage with her. And she's doing basically dances she's pirated from Alicia, but Bean really should have won the show here because Bean, she is killing the acting game. She dances around in circles and then she starts to pretend to be sick as Massey's putting on her makeup. And as Massey finishes her makeup look, Bean leans over and fake dies. So Bean should get the award, I would say.
Bean does such a good job. I'm so proud of Bean. And I also really liked the fact that Massey took the dance from Alicia because it speaks to like the relationship that all of the girls have, where not only has Alicia done this dance for these girls so many times, which I can just imagine them all at sleepovers. Like when I had sleepovers when I was in middle school, we would choreograph dances. And so I can just imagine Alicia doing that. And Massey and Claire both know where this dance is from. And Massey's just seen it so many times that she's memorized it. And then Claire appreciating the fact that Alicia did it. And then Massey took it for her own, because that's what an alpha does, is she takes all the best parts of her betas and pretends that they're hers.
In a group of friends, you can learn and grow from
each other. Yeah, no, I liked it. I thought it was really cute.
But it's perfectly executed. Everyone stands up, gives a standing ovation. And so they're
crying because they think that Bean is dead for real.
We're on to the last round. And the last round is the beauty round, which we're led to believe is the most important. And the three finalists are Amandi, Gracie, the redhead girl, and Massey. And Amandi, when she walks out on stage, is wearing what I imagine to be the, like, Andy from Devil Wears Prada, like, that going out look, you know what I'm talking about? That's what I imagine her to look like, with the long bangs and are those the Chanel boots? Here, I'm going to find it. I'll show it to you.
Find it, because I thought, and maybe I am entirely wrong, but I thought that this was Amandi wearing the black dress from Saks.
She is. Yeah. So that's the thing.
Oh, she's okay. Wearing, I thought that you were
She's wearing the Garin Ford dress that... Massey had her eyes on in Saks, and Massey is wearing the Theory dress that Claire suggested that she get, which means that, and if correct me if you think I'm wrong, but I think that Massey bought both of them and then gifted the other dress, the Garin Ford dress,
100%.
That Claire told her was wrong, to Amandi. And so Amandi is wearing this dress that we all know is grossly inappropriate for the setting. And I'm really trying to find
Claire describes it as being like appropriate for a New York City like cocktail hour or something. So it's not that it's a bad dress in and of itself, it's just not for a Florida tween pageant.
Oh yeah, fully agreed. Okay, it's the night where she meets the like the writer guy. Do you know who I'm talking about in Delaware?
Yeah, no, I do. I now that you've like
jogged
put those
memory.
Two things together.
She
now,
has
I'm
that big ugly brown bag. I'll see if I can find a photo. We can put it in the show notes. That's what I imagine that Amandi looks like. And Massey looks like an angelic, beautiful, like child. Like she looks like an age reflected, like her age is reflected. She doesn't look like too sexy. And
Gracie, who's the third girl, is wearing a yellow tulle frothy confection and actually probably looks really cute.
It sounds really cute. I like Gracie a lot.
Yeah, she seems like she sounds very cute. And so they have to do like a model walk down stage to like show, I guess, their beauty. And as Amandi is doing her model walk, Claire is so nervous and she's nervous sweating so bad. She tries to pull this like fan closer to her and instead she knocks it over. So it blows up on stage. And when I read this, I thought it was going to blow up her skirt and I'm glad that it did not. Instead, what happens is it blows up and blows Amandi's new bangs out of the way. And we see in their place huge red scabs where her eyebrows used to be.
So the bangs were a good decision for Amandi on multiple levels because she took Claire's advice and got these horrific eyebrow waxes that like totally ruined her face, which makes sense because eyebrow waxes are like literally ripping hair and skin cells off of your face.
Maybe she also used
it. She probably was on like some sort of salicylic acid or something. I bet she was on like
a retinol for acne and you're not supposed to use that. Like maybe she was on like different gel.
And got eyebrows waxed. Yeah. Exactly. So she is very upset, obviously. And kind of like all hell breaks loose at this point where Amandi and the two acid girls are very upset with her and they're like vocally upset and Lorna shuts the pageant down and they're like, okay, we're gonna do our vote. And Amandi and the two S's are standing sort of like off to the side behind her. Like I'm assuming they're like behind a tent. I'm assuming that all this is taking place in a tent and that they can see through the tent.
Yeah.
And they see Amandi, or they see Claire vote for Gracie because it's no longer like point ranked voting. It's just like write the name of the person who you think deserves to win. And so to be quote unquote fair, she votes for Gracie. She can't
pick between. Exactly.
And Amandi and the other two ass girls are so upset that they confront Lorna and like show her texts from them and Claire where Claire is like admitting to helping them. And so then Lorna throws out Claire's vote and says that the winner of the pageant is going to come down to, like, audience choice at the ball tomorrow or whatever. And Claire's like, but I didn't even vote for my friend. And so that kind of sucks for her. And she talks to it. I'm trying to think of, like, the best way to, like, navigate the next event.
What then happens is she gets home and Massey is calmly furious, I would say. She's like composed.
She locked herself in Claire's room and she's not letting Claire in.
Okay, never mind about the calm thing. But I would say
I mean that's kind of calm as opposed to like kicking Claire out of the pretty committee. Oh wait, which no, she does that already.
And so Massey is basically like, I can't believe you wouldn't vote for me. You know I was the best. And that's like what happens. And I think that's fair to say because Massey really put her all into it. And Claire was like,
this was a question that I had for you. Was it like,
why do you really want to do this? And Massey's like, I just want to win. And Claire, that's so strange to me. But so Claire, basically they fight. Massey's like, I don't know why you didn't vote for me. You knew I was the best. And Claire was like, I was trying to save this friendship. And Massey's like, well, I don't know why you're leaving. And like now Claire's like, I'm sorry. Do you forgive me? And Massey's like, no, you're out of the pretty committee. Like, sorry. You should know greatness when you see it. And so they go the next day for this final get together. And I think something that was really interesting to me was that Judy was pretty, what she said was nice. I disagree with what Jay said. Jay was like, you should just apologize so that everyone can move on. And Judy was like, I know that you're feeling bad because like you made some mistakes, but like you got to stick to your own guns here. Like, you know, be yourself. And like, and I think that that was better because the mistakes that Claire made were mistakes she was led into making because of her manipulative friends.
I don't know. I think that at this point, maybe I'm putting too much responsibility on these 12-year-old girls to like be mature and have forethought and all that sort of stuff. And we should be putting more of the onus on the adults in the situation who are putting way too much pressure on them where like there are reporters there who are like booing Claire for even being there. And I'm like, she's a 12-year-old girl who was put under immense amounts of pressure from her other 12-year-old girlfriends. Like, why are you so involved in the goings on of this one tween pageant? Please calm down.
Yeah.
Agreed. I don't know. Like, I don't put too much responsibility on Claire at all. I do think Claire should apologize, not for like not voting for Massey or not voting for Amandi or any of the girls, because I don't think that any of the other girls deserve to win. I think that they all had like negative aspects to their performance. They didn't deserve to get AIDS. I didn't think they deserved to get AIDS in the first place because I thought that none of them were going to compare to Massey. But maybe just apologizing for trying to play all the sides instead of just being honest in the first place. Like, that's what I think Claire could offer an apology for. Yeah. But in terms of trying to be fair, I don't necessarily think that she did anything wrong.
Yeah, agreed. But so what ends up happening, Claire's not allowed to cast her vote. The rest of the Lyons family casts their vote. Claire tries to apologize.
You know what else I thought was cute?
What?
Is that the fact that they're even there. Because Claire tries to, like, not go, but her parents are like, no, we have to go to support Massey. And I thought that that was really sweet.
Yeah, and I think that that's something that, like, they do really well. And I think it's good that they went because it just provides a lot of, like, good closure. And I also agree that, like, supporting Massey was important, and I'm glad that they did that. But Claire tries to apologize to SAS, and they're basically like, why would we ever accept your apology? You went against us. And then we're like, oh, we'll accept your apology, but you have to pick us over Massey. And Claire was like, I'm not going to do that. Well, she texts Massey and she's like, what would you do if you, like, would you ever make me pick, you or them? And Massey's like, no, I know you'd pick me. And then she says, she references back to their first sleepover, where, cause Massey says, what would you rather? And Claire flashback to her first horrific sleepover at Massey's house. The girls had asked her if she'd rather be A, friendless loser, or B, have a ton of friends who secretly hated her. Back then, her answer had been B, but now she knew what it was like to have friends who secretly hated her. Claire's answer had changed. You know what, SAS? The three sets of eyes turned to look at her. I've made my choice. Claire turned on the heels of her brown and blue polka dot Keds and waved goodbye. You're choosing her? Amanda gasped. Nope. Claire yelled over her shoulder. Then who are you choosing? Sarah called after her. Me, Claire shouted, not looking back, which I'm like, okay, good move for Claire. And kind of what we see going forward.
I have a lot of thoughts on this, though, because we know in the future, Massey does try to make Claire choose between groups of friends.
She does.
Like, repeatedly. Mm-hmm. And so I think that reading this chapter, if I had read this book before I read the book where Massey tries to make her choose between Mac and the soulmates, I would have a different thought process. I really liked it in and of itself, where I was like, oh yeah, that is sweet. And I like the callback to the original sleepover. And I like that Claire is standing up for herself and being like, you know what? I don't need this. And if we're thinking about it from a logical standpoint, I don't know why she would choose her Florida friends when she's not living in Florida. She's going to go back to live in Massey's guest house. Of course she's going to choose Massey. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. But I do, like, in the conversation being self-contained, I do really like it.
Yeah. I think that so then we see that Massey has won the Miss Kiss pageant, which I don't know why she wouldn't have just, the way that she's dressed is she has her one purple tendril falling down. So I don't know if she actually manipulated the situation so that she would win anyway.
But I don't think all these other people know what the purple tendril means.
Yeah. So Massey just wins. But then the funniest thing happens in that, something that they don't talk about until the last thing is that there's a Miss Kiss dress, which I don't know if you ever watched those, like, Make My Pageant Dress TLC shows. Cause there was a show on TLC where they would have someone make a pageant dress that would be like, I'm from Rhode Island, so I want my pageant dress to look like a lobster. But basically this dress is red sequin polyester ugliness. Claire says it looks like a triangle that was made to fit a square. And Massey sees the dress. She takes one look at the dress, and she kind of pulls a Harry Potter here, and that when Harry won the Triwizard Cup, where she, like, wins, but then she, I guess I'm jumping ahead of myself, but she, like, forfeits her win so that Gracie gets to be Miss Kiss and wear the dress. But Massey still takes the money and gives the money to Claire the same way that Harry gives the money to George and Fred to start Weasley Wizard Wheezes and, like, that whole thing. But basically Massey gives the money to Claire so that Claire can, like, have, because I want you to buy some clothes. And then Massey says, I don't want my best friend dressing like an LBR in the 8th grade, which I guess Massey, like, had it, like, made up for, like, I guess they made up because Claire had chosen, like, not to, like, pick. Does that make sense? Because I don't really ever see that.
She chose Massey over the Florida friends. And for that reason, Massey, like, takes her back as a friend, because what the only thing that Massey really cares about is being picked over other people.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. And so they make up, and everything's good because Claire gets to buy some clothes for the next year. But do we ever see her actually use that money? I don't know.
No. And you know what else we don't see, which I really hate? We know that Massey is 13 in the summer books. We know that Claire is 12 in this book. And we know that she eventually becomes 13. And we know that Massey is a Leo too. So there was a 13th birthday that we did not get. we did not get some sort of Massey becomes a teenager ball.
So I'm guessing if this is August, Massey's birthday is late July. Has to be, because then she's already 13. And then I guess Claire's birthday, if she has to have turned, she has to have turned 13. You can't be 12 in eighth grade. So she has to have turned 13, which
you
means
could be 12 in eighth grade.
Claire's a Virgo? I don't think so.
I'm not even obsessed. I don't even 13, really 14. Care about that. Just in
Oh, right. Well, I mean, you
could
be.
Yeah. Or like you could just change school districts and the age could be different in your school district or whatever.
Yeah.
The point being that like it's less for me about like what age they are and more the fact that I feel robbed of seeing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of seeing Massey turn 13 and become a teenager and get the birthday party that I feel like she would have demanded.
Yeah. Agreed. So that is it for the Claire book. And that is it for our summer series bonuses.
Woohoo.
Do we want to go through and rank what we think our favorites are or like our thoughts on them?
Yes, definitely. So for me as a whole,
yeah.
I had Claire, Kristen, and Dylan were the most interesting in terms of character development. I thought that we got a lot of good insight there. Kristen and Claire were best for background info on who the characters were and like their own personal stories. And then Massey and Dylan were best for fashion moments and my personal, like what I would have wanted out of a summer feeling. I wrote it as fear of missing out, but Alicia just doesn't even rank for me. Like her book was not very good.
It wasn't. I agree with you on that. I think I agree with you when it comes to character development. I think I really enjoyed getting to see more of Kristen, Claire, and Dylan. And the background info is also really helpful for Kristen and Claire. So if I had to rank them, I still think Dylan's my number one. I think Kristen's number two. I think Claire's number three. I think Massey's number four. And I think Alicia's number five. Cause I really think that Dylan's was still my fave.
I think that that's a fair assessment.
And then I think Kristen, because I don't think I'd ever read that one, gave me a ton of background information. And I also just really liked the storyline. Claire's was like totally middle of the road for me. I thought it was gave a lot of good background information. There was a lot of plot points going on. There was a lot of drama, but I don't know. It just didn't have that like same pull for me. And I also, cause I think Massey comes. So something about the Claire book is that Massey comes so late into the book. Like you're already halfway through the book by the time Massey shows up, which was interesting for me because I feel like that was where all of the like spice kind of started kicking in. And then Massey's, I think there wasn't a lot of, you know, it was an interesting storyline. I agree with you that it like, it made me feel like summertime, but most of the stuff with that one, I feel like the plot happens like it like bookends the book. So there's a lot in the beginning and there's a lot in the end, but in the middle, it's just her like dancing around, telling people they're ugly. And then Alicia's book, it just, we both agreed that it fell flat. So,
I think for me, I would rank Kristen's higher in terms of my personal thoughts on it, not in terms of like relation to the other books, but I'd give it a higher rating, like out of 10. If the plot points of her book really carried over into the rest of the series. Like we do get to see the plot carrying over into the Dempsey conversation with regards to her relationship with Lane and Massey, which I did like, but her whole plot point of being with Dune essentially evaporates after book two of the eighth grade year. And so I'm like, well, what was the point of that? So if that had carried over more, I would have given that one a higher rating. But I do agree. I think that the drawback for Massey's book for me is that we don't really get to learn any new information about Massey and she doesn't really grow as a character. Like she just goes back to being regular old Massey. And perhaps that's the point is that like, I am perfect and I don't need to change, but we know from the eighth grade that that's not true. And so I think that that's why I like Claire's book better than Massey is because we do get to see some of that vulnerability from Massey in a way that I appreciated.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. So we only have one gloss. There's one Gossip Girl moment, but I do want to bring up another moment other than the Gossip Girl moment. So our Gossip Girl flavor is Mango My God, which I thought was cute. Very summery, very festive. Loved that. But then Claire in the first like chapter or second chapter references. I'm trying to find it. After a quick extra spitty lip lick, the poor girl's gloss,
and a speedy cheek pinch, the poor girl's blush. I'm like, Claire, you're going to lick your lips with, like, cover them in slobber? And you think that's going to make them look better? That grossed me out. I read that. I was like, ew. That's what she uses in place of lip gloss, is, like, her own body fluids, which is icky.
I wish you didn't put that in the Gloss Up Girl flavor section, because I feel like you're really detracting from the value that Gloss Up Girl has to offer
I am. Society. I'm not putting it in the Gloss Up Girl section. I'm drawing a parallel between what Claire's, like... also, she has, like vanilla lip gloss from the drugstore. Like, we've seen her using chapstick. Like, come on.
Yeah, Claire is like SPF dirty gross in this book. Yeah.
She is dirty gross, especially in the first half. But that's all we got for Gloss Up Girl. What was your fashion moment from this book?
So I was a little bit torn, because I did love all of the allusions to, like, each girl having their signature color of glitter, because it reminded me of when I was in sixth grade. And in sixth grade art class, I would put glitter on each of the girls who I wanted to, like, be friends with that week. It was on Thursdays, and I was an absolute psychopath. I'm really sorry. but I did love all of the glitter passages. But my overall fashion moment was Massey's winning dress, because it's just so good. So Massey is dressed in a gold silk chiffon dress with black roses across the bust. Her tan had been dusted in bronze shimmer, and her glossy hair was in a purposely messy updo. Her purple hair streak was made to look like it accidentally fell from the diamond lips that clipped it all together. But Claire knew better. Bean pranced by her black rose-covered slides, wearing a gold blazer and matching pillbox hat. And I thought that that was so pretty. And I also like that she's wearing slides instead of heels. I thought that that was fun.
Yeah, I agreed. I like that one a lot.
And also Bean in a hat. Cute.
Yes, I like Bean in a hat. That actually makes sense. That isn't like a sleep mask. I thought that was great. So my fashion fave, in contrast, is the Florida girls. When they go to Dress Barn, their outfits I thought were really cute and very, like, age appropriate. So specifically Amandi, she shows up in, basically they all have, like, memorialized their time at summer camp together in a different way. Amandi has a lot of different colorful, like, macrame bracelets, and they added a cool rugged touch to her adorable periwinkle blue J. Crew cotton sundress. And I just thought that was really cute, because I remember coming back from summer camp, and, like, you have all these fun friendship bracelets on, and you're, like, super tan, so you look really cute in your, like, little sundresses and stuff. And I liked that. I thought that was fun. So that is my fashion fave. I also just liked the fact that we got to see more, like, age appropriate stuff and not necessarily designer. Outside of Dress Barn being horrible, which it was in real life. I have a very vivid memory of walking in and being like, oh my God, no. I guess we want to end this episode. Do we want to do it? I think we should do it how we've been doing the summer series so far. I saw that you have an In-N-Out, but I'm going to let you save those for when we record.
They may not even be In-N-Out for the next episode. So we'll see. You may never know.
You may
they never weren't know. That like significant to me either, so
great. Let's say for this one, have you been to Disney World? You've been to Disney World.
Yeah.
Okay, so do we want to do like our favorite rides at Disney World?
I can't offer like any sort of thoughts on that as a person who's been to Disney World, but like I couldn't tell you what any of the rides are, but I can't tell you about my most recent Disney World experience.
Okay, yeah, let's give a little bit of the Disney World peekaboo.
Okay, so you go first, since I have to, like, think about the most appropriate way to say this. Yeah,
well, okay. So David and I actually went to Tokyo Disney World on our honeymoon, and it was super, super fun, despite being pretty cold. But something that was, like, you know, I love my husband very, very much, but he does not like roller coasters, which kind of super bummed me out.
I didn't know because, that.
Yeah, he does not, like, physically enjoy them. They upset his stomach. And so I really wanted to go on Space Mountain, which is my favorite Disney like roller coaster anywhere, and I was like, it'd be so much fun to go on Space Mountain, but because David does not like roller coasters, I didn't want to go on there with a bunch of Japanese people by myself, so I didn't go. And so the only rides we took in Tokyo Disneyland were all of the ones meant for children. So we did It's a Small World in Japanese, which is very much similar to regular It's a Small World, but it's in Japanese. And then we did Pooh's Honey Hunt, which is terrifying. I will insert a video of the like dream sequence part of it in the show notes. I'll send it to Courtney so she can put it in there, because it's a lot to deal with. But you also just sent me the video of the animatronics for the new Belle ride. And that
was not open when we were there, but it's like a lot of the vibes are similar to that. And then we did the Pirates of the Caribbean ride, which was weird. All of the rides were in Japanese, and I don't speak Japanese aside from hello and thank you. And I can say cake and coffee and things like that. But it was a really great time. The food was awesome. There were so many good like buns. And then there's this popcorn. The soy and butter popcorn was so, so good. So we had a good time.
That sounds really fun. I'm super jealous. I love roller coasters. I don't know if I could marry someone who's anti-roller coaster. I know that.
Well, that's why you have me and I have you.
Yeah. My dad also apparently doesn't like roller coasters. And we lived really close to a Six Flags when I was growing up. And so we would go to Six Flags really often, like over the summers and stuff. And my dad would always get on the roller coasters Same. With us because we had five season people. Passes. And like he would always get on the roller coasters and he would never complain. And I didn't realize that he didn't like roller coasters until I was like, I want to say like 14 or 15. And he just like bucked it up and rode with us, which I really appreciated because going to Six Flags are some of my fondest memories. But when my most recent time to Disney.
Yeah. I didn't know David didn't like
roller coasters. My most recent time to Disney, yeah. It was the summer that I was doing an internship in Tennessee. And so that summer was horrible as it was.
Yes, I remember that.
I went to Florida to go on vacation with my family because my aunt has a house there. Like they have a condo in Florida as like their winter place. So we went there and then we went to Disney and right the night before we got to Disney, we ate at this pizza chain that's supposed to be quote unquote Chicago style pizza.
Oh no. Oh no.
And regardless of whether or not it was like authentic Chicago style pizza, it just like didn't sit well with my stomach. And then I was like, it'll be fine. I'll go to Disney.
Oh, no, Courtney.
And I got the worst food poisoning of my life at Disney to the point where like my mom and my sister like went off to go ride rides. And I was like, just leave me here on this bench. And it was, I'm surprised I didn't get kicked out of the park because it was really bad. I'll save a lot of you the horrificness of having to listen to my story, but like just take how bad you could think that a food poisoning at Disney could go. And like, it's pretty much that. It was pretty bad.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Well, we'll have to go to Disney, you and me, and then we can ride all the roller coasters. I did not know that David was anti-roller coaster until after our marriage. So, you know, I'm really proud of myself for not rethinking that and filing for divorce.
Do they have, like real roller coasters? Or is it – I had only ever interpreted it as mostly being, like, child's rides.
Have you not been on Expedition Everest?
Again, the most recent time I was in Disney was – the summer after my junior year of college and I had food poisoning.
No, we gotta go. There's some really good roller coasters. It's very, very fun. We'll have a grand old time. We should go to the one in California.
I've never been to that one either. Is Harry Potter World, is that Disney or is that not Disney?
That's Orlando. It's okay. Universal, but we can go there.
Because I've never been to Harry Potter World. I really do want to do that. I have been to Universal more recently. I went to Universal.
I went when
it
opened
trip.
For my 16th birthday.
Oh, that's fun. Yeah. I went to fun. Universal as a work trip.
Oh, yeah.
I
went for
Florida.
My 16th birthday. I have photos of it.
Cool.
We can insert all those photos. But yeah, we should definitely go to Disney. If you guys want to reach out to us, you know where to find us on socials. We are Witty Pod on Twitter. We are at Witty Committee Pod on Instagram. And I think also Witty Committee Pod on Facebook. We also just posted our first TikTok, and we're going to hopefully be better at them. I believe we are also Witty Committee Pod on TikTok. Let me double check that real quick. Yep. No, we're just at the Witty Committee. So that's fun. I'm going to be working on improving those. If you guys have suggestions for fun TikToks you want us to make or post in RE the click, let us know.
Anything next episode, My Little Phony, and pretty excited for that. That'll come out on Thursday, so get hype. And then after that, we only have one more book before the end of the series and the movie.
Wow. I do want to, real quick before I end, issue a correction last episode where I mentioned Jean-Paul Gaultier, and I meant to say Jean Galliano, as well as saying that Louise Linton was in SVU when she was in CSI New York. So apologies for those two incorrect T.
tidbits. Make sure if you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts that you rate, review, and subscribe. And we look forward to seeing you guys next episode, where we continue to judge Mean Girl right back one book at a time.
Bye.